The Variety Artist, episode 31. This one's all about embracing the absurd. This is an interview with a very unusual performer that creates very unusual and original characters. Absurd stories from absurd comedian. Oh, and being as it's almost Halloween, next week we're going to change it up a bit. The Variety Artist podcast will be all about performer horror stories. If you've been performing for any amount of time, you have horror stories of your own. These are the best. Tune in next week to hear. And make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your phone or mobile device and spread the word. That's how we can start an entire variety artist movement.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's a series irregular on The Gong Show and this year's AGT. He hosts Show and Tell Screening Spectacular in LA and is in the Idiot Workshop's Wet the Hippo comedy troupe. He's an absurdist comedian who's recently been acting like more of a collection of performance artist animals. Variety Artist, I give you Seth Word.
Yeah. What's that?
Just doing my thing. In fact, in honor of you, I'm drinking my coffee out of a cow-shaped mug.
Oh, man. Oh, what a treat you have. I hope you use ample amounts of milk in that coffee.
I wish this was video so you could see that.
Yeah, me too.
So for those of you listening to this that don't know who Seth Word is, you've seen him on AGT and on The Gong Show as Seth Word the Cow, right?
Yes. AGT was a caterpillar.
Okay.
And a beautiful, beautiful butterfly.
Now we're going to talk about AGT and all that kind of jazz, but let's start with, you grew up with five siblings, is that right?
Oh yeah, I'm one of six children. My parents love making children. So it was always a wild, wild experience growing up. Always, something was always happening.
You're kind of used to living with a bunch of people, and now you have a house with a bunch of other performers?
Once I graduated college, we went and found a very cheap apartment in North Hollywood. What was it, a 3-bedroom apartment, which is like, seems kind of big, but it was very small. I think at one point in time we had 8 people living in it, which wasn't necessarily legal. More if you count the cockroaches that we named and were large enough to probably classify as a human. But that was an experience in itself. And then we moved into a house where we had more space, and that's actually where I host my show and tell, out of our backyard. It's a chill group of artists, comedians, and performers, and one drag queen. So there's always something happening here as well.
Let's talk about this show and tell thing. So what gave you the idea to do it in your backyard?
The whole reason I put this show, because it's a screening show. So we screen comedy videos that have not yet been uploaded and published online. And it's a way for, like, it's a deadline for me to make new videos and then also to kind of connect with other filmmakers that are making comedy material and kind of catch up and see what they're up to. And it's in my backyard because it's more of a deadline. It's more of a community and a gathering and a deadline than it is a theatrical experience or show. And so a backyard is perfect because it's just a place to gather so that we can see work before. And sometimes it's not always finished. Sometimes we'll screen things that are like work in progress or trying to get people's opinion on it. So it's like a deadline show. It's a really fun time, and we've been doing it for 4 years now. It's like one of my funnest things I get to do every month and I just have to step out of my room and into my backyard.
That's great.
low work, like overhead work, to get an experience, I guess.
All I know is I have it on my, I have a bunch of sticky notes on my computer, and on one of my sticky notes it says, go to Seth Word's backyard screening.
Yes, yes. You won't regret. It's always a good time. A lot of people come and they don't really know what to expect because you're like walking into somebody's like backyard that maybe you don't know. So it's like kind of, you know, the stakes are a little high on your experience level. It's very, we have a very chill vibe, and it's like a bunch of people who are happy to see each other and happy to see what you're up to. So people are catching up and talking, a little bit of talking shop, a little bit of just like excited to see some fresh new comedy and some takes on what's happening in the world. And it ends up becoming like this like really cool community event that people get to kind of just hang out. It's like a good, nice little hangout time.
That's pretty darn cool.
Show and tell screening spectacular. That's it. That's it. That's the pitch.
Look that up online. They can find it, huh?
Got a Facebook we use a lot, and Instagram's kind of the two. I haven't quite dedicated enough time into an official website, but Facebook's probably the best.
Now, do you build all your own websites? I noticed you have a degree in some sort of media.
Well, I went to school for television production, but I've always dabbled in like graphic design and stuff, but I would never say that I'm fluent in the code language or anything of that sort. I just know how to work around it. I found out, I guess, later in my life as somebody who produces videos and shows that I have a very, very hard time delegating, not because I'm a bad delegator necessarily, but that I feel as though I can do a lot of things, not a lot of things great or awesome, but that I am capable of doing them. So I have a hard time letting them go or seeing like, hopefully this person can do it better than me. You know, that's why I get into trouble as a producer or as a showrunner, is that I'm apprehensive of delegation because I think that maybe I can do it better. Gets me into a lot of trouble. But
I'm the same way of letting go some of the things that I have to do on a daily basis. Some of the things that are probably easy, someone could take over probably easily. But for me, I'm a bit of a control freak. So I grab onto those things. I hold on for dear life sometimes.
Yep, totally. I'm actively working on that as something I wish I was better at.
So. Now let's talk about years ago when you were just starting out. You were doing singing telegrams and children's entertaining. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Fun times. There was a couple of companies that, and company is a very, I don't know if that's an appropriate term for what these were, but a dude who ran kids entertainment out of his shed, he had a shed full of costumes. He hired me from Craigslist, and I went out and did clowning and costume characters. But my favorite were the singing telegrams because I got paid the same amount, but then was only there for 10, 15 minutes and got to act like an idiot. And people loved it. They were like adults who were like, yes, insanity, exactly what we paid for. And then I go to kids' parties and it wasn't as, it was like an hour of work and kids are kicking me in the balls and biting my finger so that I felt like it's like, I don't know, I'm in a room full of piranhas, both like emotionally and physically. People were not happy that I was there.
What are the craziest things that happened during singing telegrams?
There was a kid who, like a little snapping turtle, I was doing Woody, so I didn't have any hand coverage. I just had like, I had human hands and a head, a big old stuffed Woody from Toy Story head. Uh-huh. And this kid decided to just bite my finger for who knows why and just wouldn't let go. It got to the point where I put my foot on his head to pry him off of my finger. And I was like, where is your mother? Nowhere to be found. But then mothers aren't always like that helpful. One time I went to this party in Hollywood Hills. I'm playing like very degrading
character. I'm not like a Superman or a Batman, like a sexy superhero. I was like Elmo or something, like soaking wet, sweaty in this disgusting weathered fur. And this mom is just relentlessly hitting on me, trying to advances that are like, I wonder what you look like under that fur, like that red fur. So like going on, and I'm like, what?
She has an Elmo fetish.
What world do you live in? That's just a thing. But yeah, oh my God, I could go on for hours on the intro. And this was when I was fairly new to LA too. So I'm like discovering the city. I'm like going into parts of Compton, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is why Compton is Compton. Or, oh, this is like Santa Clarita. This is what it looks like. These are the kind of people who live here. And not to say they're bad, just I was discovering new things in LA.
There are times that are rough. Years ago, I used to do birthday parties too for kids. One time I did a show in Compton. You're talking about Compton.
Oh yeah.
I went after Tommy the Clown. Have you ever heard of Tommy the Clown?
No, it sounds vaguely familiar.
Tommy the Clown is this black dude with a big rainbow afro. Yeah, he would pull up in front of a house in a little Honda Civic, little green Honda Civic, and he would pile out amongst, I don't know, five or six of his cousins. And then they do like a 10 or 15 minute show, and it was rocking. It was crazy. And then they get back in the car, and then they drive off. And then there was me. It's like, how do you follow that?
Yeah, no joke. Yeah.
Let's get into the Gong Show. How did you audition for that? Or what made you decide, you know, I got all these crazy characters, I'm going to go for the Gong Show?
That was as simple as I performed as Scott Neri's Baby Trap. Wonderful show. I'd say the best variety show in LA. I performed there fairly regularly, and Gong Show was going to all casting for the Gong Show, was going to all these different variety shows around town. There was so many times that it was almost like a joke. I think in one of my shows that I did, we labeled it like, welcome to our show, Gong Show casting directors, like, and made it kind of a thing where we're happy that we had industry in the audience, but they were just like there to try to find weird acts. So they reached out to me and were like, we think that you would do well on this. We're trying to do this. And they're explaining, cause it was the first season of this reboot. So they're explaining what made it different from the other reboots and what it made it similar to the original 70s show. And I don't know. I mean, all casting directors, like, from these shows where they don't pay you much to perform and do your act that you deserve much more for, they have to lube you up real nice and compliment you. So they were telling me that, yes, it is extremely odd, but that's what we do. And it's different than like an AGT or other talent show, because we celebrate that, the failure or the absurd. I was like, okay, yeah. And I put up the snake. It's funny because just because the people putting on the Gong Show have an idea of what they want the vibe or the because the party aesthetic to be in the show, it doesn't mean that the celebrity judges that they bring on also are even aware or know what's going on.
They seem grumpy, some of them, huh?
Yeah, and not really aware of where they are. From my perspective, I'm always like, when you get a bad judge on the Gong Show, I'm like, somebody failed to tell you where you were.
Yeah.
It feels like you think that you're here to actually judge. You're not AGT judges. You're not in a state fair judging people's for ribbons. Like, you're here literally to add color commentary. That's it. We need your perspective on what your experience was, not what you think their value is as a performer.
Yeah.
That show is not about that. from my opinion, and what, you know, what the original Gong Show was about.
As a viewer of both the original Gong Show and this one, it's kind of like a party in your living room.
Yeah, that's what they kept saying. Like, that's what they want it to be. Come hang out with my weird friend, says the host. We have a party kind of celebrating the innately odd or goofballs who thought this is a good idea. Let's laugh at how stupid this idea is. We're all laughing together. And I think they got it a lot better this season, in my opinion. But certain judges, I think, just kind of, but you know what? I don't blame them. There's so many shows out now, American or international talent shows, that are all about or finding the next best thing. And we have too many Kardashian or other celebrities who don't have this glorified skill or worthiness to be famous. So we don't need any more of that. We were looking for the people who deserve to be famous or deserve to have shows. And so, you know, you got American Idol, you got X Factor, you got The Voice, you got AGT, you got all these shows where they're actually, that's what they're looking for. They're not looking to have a part. They're looking to make somebody big. They're looking to give somebody $100 million to perform in Vegas. And so the Gong Show is almost a parody of that, but the celebrity judges didn't quite get the memo in some of the episodes, in my opinion.
In my opinion, too. They're like, well, here's some money to be a judge on our show. Go.
Yeah. Be a judge. And they're like, okay, well, I know how to judge, so I'll just do that then. Like, I mean, if I come out as an entertainer, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I come out and you immediately get up to cease that bit from being done, or you don't want to see it through, that in my mind is like, well, you don't understand. The show is about seeing what they're out here for. So I kind of would call them out or be like, you didn't even see what I came here to do. How do you know that you didn't like it? So anyway, but I mean, I'm very fully aware of how stupid everything I do is. So it's not like anything's hurting my feelings when somebody's like, why? I'm like, exactly. These are the questions you need to be asking.
I think my daughter put it, I was doing research on this and she put it perfectly. Oh, yeah. She goes, does he realize how stupid his act is? And I'm like, that is the reason that it's hilarious. And she agrees. So she goes, yeah, well, you know, it may be stupid, but I'm showing all of my friends his videos.
Oh, good.
So,
wow, I love it.
You must be doing something right.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? And really, who knows? That's the real question. Who actually knows?
The idea of judging what you do across from a magician, across from a juggler.
Right,
across from a, how do you judge that?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I would never ask somebody to do that.
So when you're putting together a new character, and your characters are crazy and absurd, when you're putting together a new character, is there like a process of things, or do you just start coming out of them with your mind, or what is it?
I mean, everything's different. A lot of times I'll have a character get developed from an existing property. Like, I made a sketch. I needed a mermaid, and so I built this costume, and then it's been laying around. I'm like, I should do a mermaid, like, live. Just like, what if I'm a mermaid, but I'm obviously a man? And yeah. So just the stupidity of a mermaid man, what are they called? Merlads? I don't know what a merman. Maybe it's just a merman. I don't know. Anyway, it's not a merman. He's a mermaid. That happens to be a man. And okay. So that's, to me, is just stupid. And so that character is that. That's all that is. And then, but then there's other times that I think in the beginning of, I was trying to make the snake. I have a pet snake and I love her. She's beautiful. She's a wild creature. I don't know. Anytime I do like an animal or some type of animal character, I think animals are just hilarious. Most of the time they're just hilarious, and it's a mixture of many things, but snakes I think are one of the funniest creatures in the world, because they have such high status to humans. They're so terrifying to people. But if you really take a step back and look at snakes, they're hilariously goofy because they don't have any arms or legs. Yeah. And they just slither around and they fall over all the time because they don't have any arms or legs, and they try to climb things, but guess what? They don't have any arms or legs, and so they just fall over. And it's hilarious to me, and I think that somebody with such high status who falls on the ground so much, like, how is that not something that is just, I don't know. I've just always thought snakes were beautifully and perfectly comedically instrumental in describing, like, I don't know, this status juxtaposition. So anyway, I tried to make a character that was kind of based on that. That's like, and then, but whenever, anytime I attempt to do an animal, like, I obviously am not an animal. I look like a human wearing an animal costume. And so that adds a whole nother layer of stupidity onto anything I do. So it builds this playground that I get to run around and kind of mess with and play with, like, status or making the audience feel unsafe or like, what is he trying to do? What is he doing? It's like, I don't know. It's a lot of times it's a sandbox, and kind of donning a really dumb costume immediately gets me and the audience into a state of play that's like what you need to do in as any kind of clowning, or I guess the performance that I kind of do. You got to get the audience to be like, okay, I get it. I understand. I'm letting go of this reality, and I'm going to go where you're going, just for at least for a little bit, to see what your point is. Some of them come from just observations. Others come from, like, a willingness to put a point onto an observation, or sometimes it's just a costume that I had or wanted to make and thought, like, well, let's try to make this stupid.
The snake is great. The snake is hilarious. I also have a pet snake. One of the things I do is I do magic with live animals.
Oh, nice. So cool.
What everybody asks me all the time, I'll have my snake out, and once again, no arms and legs and things. They're like, well, where does he poop?
Yeah.
Because snakes have no great butt. Question. I mean, they have a butt, yeah, but you can't see it. So I love that you address that in your act.
Yeah. And it's like,
in a way,
accidental in a lot of times when I'm doing this bit, is that I'll eat somebody, either a plant or somebody who didn't know what was going on. Almost always they get lost, because I mean, I've never been the one eaten, of course, but I can only imagine how claustrophobic it is in this human snake costume. They can't find the butthole from within, and I'm like having to explain to them where a butthole is while they're trying to dig their way out, and it's confusing. I admit it. It is very confusing, both on a real snake or a fabricated one. Where is the butthole exactly? No one knows. No one knows.
No one knows. So they fight to get out once you swallow them.
Yeah, and it's always this awkward, like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Well, you didn't tell me. You didn't tell me where I go after this.
I don't think I've ever had anybody fight to get out of my butt.
Just dig it. Just dig yourself out.
So the next character is going to be like the snake with hemorrhoids, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yo, believe me. That's always been a thing. I haven't quite figured out how to make it a discreet hole that doesn't look disgusting when somebody comes out, because they always stretch it out way too much. Or I was in Germany and I did the snake in this German talent show. One of the judges who was way too big for me to eat. He's like this, like, almost 7 foot man who's broad shoulders. He got scared, I guess, halfway through and just bit and ripped his way out and made a whole nother butthole. I didn't realize that is what happened that's what happened at first. When I realized it, I said to the judges, like on stage, I was like, you guys, you literally ripped me a new one. And like, no one laughs. And I'm like, come on, that was an amazing impromptu joke that was just found. You've got to give me at least a guffaw and nothing. And so I reiterated, I was like, no, look, you ripped a hole. This is the ripped hole. This is the butthole. You ripped me a new one. No one understood what I was saying. They were like, everybody, you know, speaks German, or if they do speak English, they don't understand the phrase, rip me a new one. So I'm just like there standing in front of everyone with two buttholes being like, no, look, you have to understand. It is funny. Butthole, hole, rip me a new butthole. It is hilarious. And no one is laughing. And my girlfriend came with me. She was helping assist in like costume. And I hear her in the far back. This thing's got like, I don't know, they've got at least 1,000 people in this huge auditorium. And she's like in the far back, and I just hear her dying. She's laughing so, but she is literally the only one in the audience laughing. And I was like, well, okay, at least we got that.
Everybody's looking at her like, what are you laughing at?
Yeah.
What are your other characters? Anybody who hasn't seen you before, which I can't believe there is somebody out there that hasn't, but what are your other characters?
I've got a whole Rolodex of stupid things. Been on an animal kick, the Gong Show after the Walrus. One of the producers came up and was like, what other animals do you have? We need to do more animals. They're so stupid.
Oh.
And so I was kind of upgrading those and doing a lot, but I've got a bunny and I have a caterpillar that wants to be a beautiful butterfly, and then we've got a snake, I've got a cow, there's a whole list here.
Those are just the animals, huh?
Those are just some animals. I have a black widow spider that falls in lava and then immediately eats the person. And they all have their vices, these animals. I get tired of something and I'll just be like, well, I'm going to make a new thing. And then I'll do that for a little bit. What I've realized is that I don't do a bit enough to really refine it and perfect it like a circus actor, like a skill-based performance. These guys, they'll do perfect their act, and I'll travel the world with this perfected act. It's either to music, or that is, you know, beat for beat, like exactly the way they want it. And that's, I couldn't be further from the truth with what I do, because I will like throw something up half-cocked, and then I'll find what makes it funny in a performance, and then I'll do it a few times, and then I'll kind of get sick of it in a way. And instead of like perfecting it to where it is something worthy of being put in front of, you know, a huge audience, I'll be like, oh, let's make another one. Let's just do something else.
And that keeps it fresh for you.
It does. It definitely keeps it fresh. I think it keeps the audience confused, which is, whether it's something I want or something I've just landed, it's consistent. The audience is consistently unsure as to what I'm attempting here. If they're afraid of me, it's more that they're afraid of like this man's psychological well-being. But I like to have people feel safe, of course, in a show. I've had that note many times from different directors, different coaches, or whatever. It's always the note that if you can't have people laugh if they're afraid or they're worried about you or about themselves. To that, I say, true, maybe. But as a performer, you're not exclusively looking for constant laugh throughout the whole thing. At least I'm not. I'm more interested in a journey or taking people on like a ride, and being unsure, being confused is a big part of that journey, and trying to figure out what is the goal, or what do they want me to do? What should I do? What is happening? What's like, you know, whatever, that instability allows for vulnerability, and that vulnerability is what makes an experience. And that's what people go to see shows for. That's what people want entertainment. They want to have an experience. So I think it's a, you know, there's a gambit of emotions that can be played, but I like finding a variety of them.
Let's talk about your YouTube channel. You have 28 million views on your YouTube channel?
I guess so.
That's what I hear. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I mean, that's all YouTube for, yeah. When I was in college, I produced a sketch show. And we were in charge of putting on a show once a month that would broadcast on our television station.
That is the Random Show?
Yeah, the Random Show, which was originally created by Mike Richards, the producer of The Price is Right. He was the host of like Beauty and the Geek a long time ago. He's done a bunch of TV stuff, and he also produces Let's Make a Deal. He's making shows all the time, but he originally in 1995 made the show that we landed on producing and making, me and my buddies. Similar to how Show and Tell is now a deadline for us to just make content. And so we'd throw it up on our individual YouTubes as well as the TV channel that our school was broadcasting on. It was like a really fun experience, and also a way as a sandbox for us to like learn and play. And it kind of was a more controlled environment to where I was going to class and I was making videos. It was like all I was doing. And then I was also on the cross country team, so I was also running a lot. That's a whole nother story.
So you're running and you're
running around in circles, shooting videos, and trying to make it to class every once in a while. I have over like 70 videos that I've shot and edited that I haven't uploaded on YouTube because there's not as big of an audience online as there is. I could put up a video, I could upload a video today, and it would get anywhere from 100 to 150 views. That's like where it'll max out at. So the incentive to get it online isn't nearly as big as the incentive to get it up at my show and tell, because I get, I don't know, 70 to 100 people, but I get to see their face watching it. I get to hear them laugh. I get to experience their thoughts and their words afterward. It is so fulfilling. After I'm done shooting and editing a video, sometimes it'll sit on a hard drive and wait to be finalized and uploaded for years because I don't have that other deadline. That's kind of what I'm looking for. And also, I hate editing. That's a huge part of that. I love performing. I hate having to make those perfectionist video decisions. And so anyway, I'm constantly in search of collaborators who want to help edit and who want to help take on.
They can do all the stuff you don't like to do.
Yeah, but like I want to find somebody, like a partner that like truly loves editing or truly loves taking something and manipulating it in a way that delivers the joke as best as it can. Or, you know, there are people out there that just, they love it. They don't necessarily love the performance aspect. They don't necessarily enjoy the shooting aspect. Maybe they do, but they really love the editing and the creation behind the keyboard. And so I want to partner up with somebody who really likes that, because then we're helping each other out. I can't tell you, I've got terabytes full of sketches and videos that I've yet to upload. I'm always making new stuff. A lot of the performances that I do live end up becoming videos, or vice versa, the videos I then create a live character out of it. They kind of feed each other.
If you're hearing this out there, Seth Ward is looking for a editor and
SOS, yes. If you are an editor and you want to edit some zany vids, you'll come my way. Call 50-SETHWARD. That's 50-SETHWARD. That's my actual hotline.
You can call it.
Sure. Yeah. No, totally. Just give it a call whenever you want to talk to somebody or a machine.
So let's go back a little bit. Something I read that was really fascinating to me, it has absolutely nothing to do with your performing career. It is that you were a spiritual life advisor in housing community living.
Oh, yeah, I sure was. That was one of the jobs in college. Yes, I'm a spiritual life advisor. Anyone, come to me with your spiritual needs, and I will let you know theology that will get you through life's problems.
If you have a spiritual problem, 50 Sethward.
Yeah, 50 Sethward. You got it, baby. You got it. Here I am. Come at me. You know what is funny? I was in Italy a couple weeks ago doing this TV talent show. I had a couple of days off. And so we spent 2.5 days in Rome, and then we went to the Vatican City. And the Vatican is spiritual city, baby. They've got everything built on. But it was just funny to have another juxtaposition that I thought was hilarious of me coming from shooting the show where I was an animal doing animal stuff, like a bunny who can't stop humping the judges or the cameraman, and loving that and connecting with people in that level of being like absurd and erroneous, this like stupidity to a higher degree where I have the attention of hundreds of people in the studio audience, these famous Italian people who I have no clue who they were, but they were important because I knew it. They were sitting in important chairs. But me being able to mess with that, having the liberty to connect with an audience and say, like, look how silly this is. We're very silly, but we're having fun, and loving that, and that being such a fun part of life. And then going to the very next day, going to the Vatican City, where people have spent millions and millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of years in the creation of something that they believe to be true and holy. And it's just so gaudy. Every church is absurdly perfect in how detail oriented they are and how gold it is. And I was just like, this is the way that somebody could live their life. Also, they could hump a cameraman. That's another way you can live your life. And we live in the same world. And isn't that insane?
That is insane. Have you ever thought about maybe just dressing up as one of your characters and going to the Vatican?
Oh, man. I thought that. So I thought I was like going, you know, I walked through the Vatican museums, and we took a tour of the Sistine Chapel, and it was beautiful and amazing. And one of those moments that you're like, wow, this is, it's so poignant. This is such a poignant moment. And then I could not help but like creep in my mind, like, what if I was just a cow whose udders like couldn't stop just leaking milk while we're in this tour, like for no reason? Like, what if? And I thought about that, and I quickly was like, there's no way. That was so disrespectful. But at the same time, I was like, what if though? What if?
Disrespectful and hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I would love it. But my girlfriend, who is an art major and holds the Sistine Chapel ceiling to a higher level than it already is, would not have approved of such antics. Would not have liked that.
She's at home. You guys are getting ready. She's like, excuse me, Sethward, take off.
Please take off the udder, please. Yeah.
We're going to the Vatican.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We're going to move on to some of the Variety Artists' favorite game show. Does that sound good?
No, heck yeah.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
I'm going to read a headline, and you tell me if it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Oh, good. I love it.
First headline. Mike Myers saved Sethward's life when a costume was trying to suffocate him during a dress rehearsal.
What a beautiful memory. That is true. It's a truth. It's a beautiful memory. It was the most connection that I had with Mike Myers, the host of The Gong Show. We had a dress rehearsal when I was being a baby chick, but I had just recently redesign the costume to where my arms were completely incapable of like being used as arms. They were now wings, and I was tied up inside of a balloon that was also inside of a fabric enclosure that was supposed to protect this balloon. But anyway, it was only successfully worked out like once before the attempted gong show appearance. We get there and we didn't fill the balloon up with enough air. The balloon is supposed to be my egg. It's a white balloon, a huge balloon that I'm inside of.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to hatch out of it when they pull the curtains up. We didn't get enough air in. They kept waiting for the cameras to be ready. The air just kind of seeped out. And then I got a little claustrophobic. And so I tried to stuff my beak, which I also have a huge beak on. I tried to get my head through the hole before all the air disappears. And I didn't quite make it. And Mike Myers is there. And I'm like, help. I'm like screaming for help. And no one on in the crew knew what was going on. They were like, okay, we need 5 more minutes to get the cameras ready. And I was like, no, we got to get me out of here right now.
Yeah.
And Mike Myers reached in and ripped the balloon open and pulled me out and was like, he was like, what did he say? He said, man, I can't tell you how many times a costume's tried to kill me. It's totally worth it though, man. I love your stuff. So we connected. We connected on that level, and now we're best friends.
There you go.
Mike Myers.
Next headline. Seth Ward's working on his next character, the Wombat.
Well, that's a great idea. I do not, in fact, have any Wombat plans, but if somebody from Australia wants to hire me to go on the story, I've got a great kangaroo idea.
Oh.
And a wombat is also from Australia, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Wombat seems like a great idea, too.
He looks like a fat, muscly koala bear, gray, muscly koala bear. But his backside, his butt, is made of cartilage. And the way he protects himself, if some other animal tries to attack him, he whips his butt around and he hits him with the cartilage and causing injury to the other animal.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, huh?
See, these are the animal facts that stimulate like such fun for humans. They just are like, I could do that. Yeah. That seems like a fun thing to do.
All right, next headline. You ready?
Ready.
Here we go. Seth Ward's snake tried to eat him a couple of nights ago.
Oh, that is true, actually. My beautiful snake that I love to death, she's been a very sweet and docile creature, got out of her terrarium somehow. Who knows how? Crazy story. And I walk into my room, and she had built herself a secret little compartment right at eye level on the door to where she latched out at me. When I walked through the doors, this is nightmare fuel. This is like straight out of nightmare.
Dang.
And barely missed my face getting the side of my hair. Like I could feel it. And I was like, what the heck was that? And I turned around and there she was like recoiling back into her little hiding place. Like how she got on the door, I do not know.
Oh.
But it was insane. And I was like, wow.
She has no arms and legs.
She has no arms and legs. And she somehow climbed up there and sat and waited for the moment whenever I got home. How did that happen? First of all, she's not usually, I think she's in heat right now. She's just trying to power feed. She's trying to mate. I don't know what she's doing. But
so when you walked in the room, she's like, ooh, Seth Ward.
Yep. She was like, let's get it on. And by on, I mean your face and my mouth.
She hit the button and all of a sudden the music was starting.
Yeah, she started the Bluetooth speakers. Yeah.
Amazing. All right, next headline. Here we go. Seth Ward is seriously thinking about buying the house next door, hiring a construction crew to tear it down while he's in it just for the footage.
a great idea as well, but this boy does not make nearly enough money to have that plan even anywhere near in the direct future. Fall.
Not yet.
Not yet. Yeah, yeah, not yet. That sounds like Buster Keaton level of comedy, and I'm not against it in any way. Just not where I'm at in my life.
Not right now. All right, next one. Seth Ward has peed himself on stage multiple times.
This is true.
Oh.
I have done that. Both fake and not not fake pee.
Okay.
For you gotta, commitment level.
You got to tell me about the first time it ever happened to you for real. Not for fake, but for real.
Oh, man. Well, there are moments when I get myself into a situation that I regret immediately, but there's no way of getting out. One being the chicken inside the egg and not having a way out. But a lot of times it is like I'm in a music festival performing and I really have to pee, but I've got a costume on that takes 15 minutes to get in and out of, so I just have to hold it and then I get on stage and then I the moment presents itself where this character needs to be nervous, and so I show that by just peeing myself. It's hilarious and to me, mostly just to me. I think that was, well, I think there's one point in that scenario where I was playing the role of this like intern with a Jive Joint, which is this group comedians and musicians that I perform at music festivals with. One of my good buddies who does comedy and characters with me named Ross Steves, who's a genius comedian, was pimping me out in like improv or comedian sketch terms. It means he's kind of giving me a gift, but forcing me to do his gift by telling me that I'm nervous and that I'm not nervous enough.
Oh,
I had some clipboard, and I don't think this was the first time, but it was definitely the most successful time because I had really built up some bladder storage on this one. He was like, you're more nervous, than I kind of yes-anded him maybe a little too much and then just peed, and it was a nice, steady, healthy stream down my leg in a pile on stage, and he'd lost it like, oh my god, like what is wrong with you, but like was laughing, and everyone in the audience was like very, very unsure as to whether I had a prop bag of water in my pants or if I had just let it go, and no one really knew, I don't think, in the audience, but my partner, my comedy partner, like he for sure, he was like, you dummy, but he was like losing it. It was funny. Like, it was like, you made me do this, you sit here and watch this happen, it is your fault. But yeah, I'm a sick freak.
That is the perfect description of you, is that most people, you ask the question, well, you know, when was the first time you peed your pants? And people say, well, gosh, I was really embarrassed about this. But I asked Seth, and he says, well, the most successful time was.
It really worked out that time. Really worked. Another time I had a character that was supposed to pee himself, but I had this like Ziploc bag full of water and I had like filled it up way too much. And I was sitting in the audience in the show. This was in like more of a proper theater. When the host called me up, I was playing this nervous character. And I was like, I don't know. And I was sitting in the front row and I was kind of being really coy. I was supposed to get on stage, be so nervous that I wet myself by like releasing this bag of fluid. But it had slowly let go during the show. And I didn't realize that it had completely leaked out. My pants were just soaking wet. This was not real pee.
Oh, no.
This was fake pee. And he saw it while I was trying to be coy and be like, I don't know, I'm really nervous. And he's like, oh, it's okay, you don't have to go up. And I was like, no, I mean, I was like, come on. Like, he thought I had legitimately peed myself and was so nervous that I couldn't perform. And I was like, I'm playing a bit. This is a bit. I need you to force me to get on stage so that then I reveal to everyone else that I wet myself. But now you're letting me off easy and just saying I don't have to perform. Anyway, I remember that as being a hilarious moment where it did not work and it was a prop malfunction all in the same night.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
All right, we're going to move on now to our fan questions. There were a couple of fan questions. Ooh. Does that sound good?
You better believe it.
Every time I have a new guest on, I put on my Facebook that you can ask questions of me, and I will ask those questions to our guests. Christopher Barnes, an amazing magician and author of the smash hit book, Be More Funny.
Yeah.
That's, have you read that?
Oh, I haven't read it. I know Christopher Barnes is a wonderful man.
It's so good. There's a great interview with him on The Variety Artist, if I do say so myself,
yes.
On episode 19. He's excellent. All right, so he says, Sethward is amazing. So excited for this one. All right, that wasn't really a question, but he does ask a question. All right, he asks, I'm curious, with all the new exposure, how do you plan on taking advantage of it to get even further?
Ooh, wow, that is a great question that I ask myself. Exposure has been good as far as getting footage for like reels and stuff. As far as me getting more opportunities, I think he's right in that it is a lot up to me to like press that. And one of the things that I'm actively trying right now, pulling together like a pitch packet video of a television show that I'm producing, or like not really producing, but creating, trying to pitch. Me kind of man on the street, but like an animal type costume, like some of my characters kind of come to life in this kind of split narrative / comedy format type show that I'm kind of pitching to the producers of The Gong Show and then anyone else that has seen what I've been doing. That's what I'm trying to do.
Eddie Rice Jr., an actor and clown stiltwalker, asks, what is your background training for all the craziness and physical comedy you do?
I've done various stuff around town in LA, a lot of improv and sketch and of the likes of that. But I think the most, if I could promote anything that has been the most valuable tool to me benefiting or me growing as a performer and as, I don't know, solidifying like my stage presence or what you would consider like my comedic voice is the Idiot Workshop.
Oh.
That is run by John Gilkey, an ex Cirque du Soleil clown. That without a doubt has been my, I think, like training ground the past 4 or 5 years. It's helped me grow tremendously and helped me become more vulnerable as a person on stage. But yeah, that's like the number one, the Idiot Workshop.
So if anybody's here in LA, jump in.
Yeah, and I think Gilkey does workshops in Vegas every now and then. I think he did one, he's gone around. I think he was in Canada at one point. But it's mostly in LA. That's where he lives. That's where all of our shows. I do a show once a month with Wet the Hippo called The Merge. And they do a bunch of different shows all around.
What do you do with the Wet the Hippo comedy show?
It's hard to exactly explain. One must go to a show and define it themselves, I think. The Merge, it's a collection of characters who come together to try to put on an experience unlike anything else that's like half improv, half sketch, half... It's not really improv at all, and it's not really sketch because they're mostly like physical comedy or absurdist comedy bits, moments, skits. I don't know what you can actually call it because it's not really any one of these things, but it's a collection of moments that are very, that kind of focuses on connecting with an audience and being vulnerable for an audience.
Well, if it's anything we've learned from this interview, you are a person who performs out of the box. You know, you're not the standard magician, the standard actor, standard performer. And if someone were to come to LA, they could go on an entire Sethward performing tour. They could first go to Scott Neary's Booby Trap, then go to show and tell screening spectacular, right, then go to a With the Hippo show.
Yeah, yeah.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go because I have to pee for real.
Yeah.
Good. And I'm going to actually go and use the bathroom probably. I could just do it here in my chair, I suppose.
Yeah, you sure could. No one would ever know unless you told us.
me and my dog. All right, last thing before I let you go, let's talk about your Patreon. What's going on with your Patreon, or what is Patreon for people who don't know?
Patreon for people who don't know is a website that you can pledge to support a performer or a project or somebody or something that you can either pay monthly or a project by project basis. But essentially is like a subscription to get exclusive content from either a person or a project or an organization. My Patreon, I just started it up, so it's still fairly fresh. I'm planning on getting that very regular to be able to put up some of these sketches or some behind the scenes stuff that would be then considered exclusive content that is not on my Facebook or YouTube or anything. And you can pledge like $1 a month or $5 or $10 or however much you want to then get kind of a behind the scenes access to the daily stuff that what things are in the works, what things are about to come out. You get a first look and other stuff. As long as maybe some exclusive merch, baby.
So if you like what Sethward's doing, go to patreon.com/Sethward.
Yes.
And you can support all the stuff that he's doing and be the first to get unreleased footage and different things like that.
If you're into that kind of stuff or want to learn more about the absurdist world in LA, that's my place that I use as a way to kind of have as it's a support system to make new stuff for me. But it can also be kind of a support system for the patrons.
Thanks, Sethward. You were so awesome. That was super, super fun. If someone wants to get a hold of you other than Patreon, where can they get a hold of you? Or is there an email address or something? Or how does one get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm pretty regular on my Instagram. If people want to slide into some DMs on Instagram, or they can reach out to me on Facebook. Those are probably the best way to reach out to me. I've got my email on my website, SethWardEllison.com. Those two socials are my best.
Yeah, and jump into Sethward's YouTube channel too. It's hilarious.
Yes, yes. There's a whole library of insanity.
Library of insanity. That's what it should be called.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, tell a friend. That's how we can spread the word. Also, make sure to go to thevarietyartist.com/book to get your first free audiobook from audible.com. You can reach me at my email at john@thevarietyartist.com or join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
Woo!
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.